Good morning, TNC family. On this first Sunday in December, 21 days before Christmas, and the celebration of the story of the divine entering our world in a unique and human way, the story of how a humble birth is noticed and celebrated by stars and shepherds and angels and prophets and kings and cattle, the story that is the inspiration for some of today's best and most popular music, from Handel's Messiah to Bach's Christmas Oratorio to Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker to the songs of Andy Williams, Nat King Cole, Bing Crosby, Michael Bublé, Jose Feliciano, and Mariah Carey. The story originally written in only two places, written between 60 and 90 AD, Common Era, and both preserved in our Bible. The story is Matthew's story and Luke's story. You can read both in about 15 minutes. So think of that, these 15 minutes told and read to generation after generation have changed our world unlike any other 15 minutes. Not only have they been the foundation of the world's largest religion, they are stories celebrated by millions of folks who don't even consider themselves to be Christ followers. In fact, no other religious holiday is so universally celebrated by people who are outside of the tradition who originated it. And some of our happiest, earliest memories of childhood are moments of wonder and excitement associated with Christmas time and Christmas morning and Christmas pageants and jingle bells and wrapping paper and the smell of gingerbread houses, cinnamon cookies, and peppermint candy canes. And it's not just our early years. Some of our happiest memories every year, our whole lives, center around Christmas, music, lights, gatherings, food, Christmas gifts, Christmas presents under the tree, which is what I want to talk to you about today, Christmas presents. Now, it's only in Matthew's version of the original story that we get the idea of gift-giving, of presents. Chapter 2 and verse 1 tells us that after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi, and almost every translation has a footnote there explaining, Magi means wise men specializing in astronomy, astrology, and natural science. Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where's the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." Well, it turns out the star doesn't stop in Jerusalem. Verse 9, the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star stopped, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasure chest and gave him presents, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And these presents and this story is the inspiration for what would later become our Christmas gifts, presents under the tree. Now, the wise men, of course, did not put the gifts in a cardboard box and wrap it with colorful paper like we do. We wrap our presents. So think for me for 1 second about this idea of why we wrap presents. Margaret Visser, the award-winning author in her book, The Gift of Thanks, she has a whole chapter called All Wrapped Up, a chapter about presents and the wrapping of presents. We wrap, she points out, not because the gift is in need of protection. Rather, it's because the wrapping is, quote, a sign that the object has changed from a commodity into a gift. In other words, the gift you give this Christmas has almost invariably been available and bought as a commodity, but in the wrapping, you have, in her words, summoned it to become something else, a gift. Which is why, for example, if I go to the store and buy a book or a t-shirt or some food, and there's no special occasion for it, it's just for me, I don't wrap it and give it to myself and say, ooh, what did I get for myself? It's just a transaction. My money for that commodity. But when we want to turn it into a gift, we sometimes put wrapping paper around it in order to create this expectation, wonder, hope, beauty. Bows and bells and frills and folds and so on. And even if we like buy ingredients and make something, a dozen Christmas cookies for a neighbor, say, we usually wrap it in plastic wrap and put a bow on top. Or if we give a very large present, one too big to wrap entirely with paper, say a car or a piano or a life-size stuffed animal, or maybe a living gift, a dog or a fish in a fish tank, we still feel inclined to make a movement toward wrapping it. So the receiver knows it's a gift, and so we'll put a bow on it, or around it, or attach a card to it. Visser goes on, quote, "Always, of course, we remove the price from the gift, for presents, unlike commodities, are priceless, but we attach cards with names and brief messages that are meant to be carefully read before or sometimes after the gift is opened. This practice assures the person that this present was meant for him or her alone. And usually it is important that givers make themselves known. After all, a gift describes a relationship between a giver and a receiver." She goes on, "And the wrapping paper, merely decorative, not at all useful, except for that deeper meaning, is material proof of the care taken and of the giver's caring about the recipient. Although," she says, "the gift inside should prove the caring on its own." And then one more quick insight she offers that I'll share. She writes, quote, "Sometimes gift givers feel constrained to ask people what they would like to receive. A sign," she says, "that people in our society have so much already, or that we do not know others well enough to be able to gauge their tastes or know what they have not acquired, or we're just too lazy to find out, or we have too little time to discover." And so she says, by asking what somebody wants, we forego two important elements of modern Western gift-giving: the receiver's surprise and the giver's own decision-making. And yet, even when the recipient knows what we have bought, we still feel we should wrap it before presenting it. And that's a lot of information on wrapping, but of course, there's a lot baked into the wrapping and giving of a gift. And of course, it varies from culture to culture and from community to community and from family to family. But now, for a few moments, I want to try to give you some universal principles around this question. How do you know the best gifts when you get them? And it's an important question because in Matthew chapter 2, King Herod tells the wise men, oh, he too wants to bring gifts to the child. But the reader understands that King Herod's gifts, they're not the gifts anyone wants to receive. But the wise men bring gifts, and they're the real deal. So, TNC, how will you know a real gift when you get one this season? Because if we all, and now listen, can recognize the best gifts in these coming days, then I think it will go a long way towards really making this a wonderful next 21 days. And if we know where to look for the best of gifts, I think we'll discover we have more of life's greatest gifts than we ever imagined we did. And it will lead to a spirit of gratitude and joy and generosity that we might otherwise miss out on. So, Let me mention four ways to identify a real gift, the best of gifts. And here's number one. Number one, the best gifts always have a person attached to them. The best gifts always have a person attached to them. I got an email last week from a local tire company wishing me happy holidays, followed by a list of special Christmas gifts. Deals like $70 off a set of tires, $5 off an oil change, and so on. No person attached to it. A couple days ago, Brittany and I got a card in our mailbox from our car insurance company. A generic card, machine-printed words, and a signature was also machine-printed. Nothing was inside except holiday wishes from State Farm. I almost called Jake from State Farm and said, "Hey, Jake, I've got a better idea." Because with a great gift, the best gift, there's always a real person who comes with it, saying to you that she or he wants to be a part of your life. And one of the things I love about the Magi, the wise men, is that they made the journey themselves when they could have sent servants or just like FedExed the gifts. But they came themselves from the east to Jerusalem because it wasn't just about the gift, it was about the relationship. They came from the east, the text says. Actually, in 200 AD, Tertullian, the academic and author from Carthage in the Roman province of Africa, he argued that the wise men fulfilled Solomon's prayer in Psalm 72. Quote, "May the kings of Sheba and Seba present him gifts." And also fulfilled Isaiah's prophecy, chapter 60, quote, "Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord." Now, ancient Sheba is in modern Ethiopia, about 1,500 miles from Jerusalem. And so, think with me, these men of wisdom and power and influence and money made a long journey from the east to Jerusalem across a landscape that is exceedingly diverse, huge deserts and granite and sandstone mountain passes and scarce water supplies. And modern writers who have made this journey tell us that in these conditions you travel best if you have serious footwear and your feet and coverings for your body and face are strong, and you bring plenty of water with you, and even with camels or donkeys, the best you can hope for is about 20 miles a day. And so a journey of about 1,500 miles, 20 miles a day, will take you about 75 days to get to Jerusalem. But the wise men make this journey anyway because they don't want to just send a gift. They want to bring the relationship, bring the encouragement, bring the love. And the best gifts always have love and relationship and encouragement embedded in them. Which is why, when you get a gift during these next 21 days, I hope you'll see and know that the best gifts probably will not be wrapped. I remember my first introduction to the writings of Eugene Peterson. It was a dog-eared, far too marked up copy of his book, Reversed Thunder. The book had coffee stains and way too much highlighting, and an older lady in the church had given it to me and had wrote way too much in the margins, but she had read it and she said it changed her, and so she thought of me and wanted to share that with me. And so I read it, and the truth is it did change me and the way I read the Bible and the way I saw God's love. And it was a great gift, unwrapped, person attached. And I will always remember the first Christmas after my divorce, when my children were with their mother until the day after Christmas, and my brothers and parents were out of state. I would be joining them the day after Christmas. And so I was going to be alone on Christmas until George and Diane and their family invited me into their home that year, that morning, with their entire family. And we all ate brunch together and then played table games and pool and opened gifts. And it was the greatest of gifts to be with them, unwrapped, people attached. And I'm just saying, TNC, if we'll begin to see that the best gifts will likely be unwrapped gifts with people attached, then we'll begin to see that we can start to make a list of gifts received today and every day between now and December 25. You know, like when you take a breath of fresh air, when you smell the scent of a real Christmas tree, when you taste hot chocolate with marshmallows, when you listen to that favorite Christmas song, when you see the snow or the fire or feel the forgiveness or laugh with a friend, these are the gifts that are of the deepest and most important value because they're people or a person attached to those as well. Here's some more real gifts, unwrapped, person attached. A mother who reads her daughter a bedtime story. A husband who serves his wife with love and respect and servanthood. A friend who serves you in a way you could not serve yourself, with their skill set or wisdom or resources coming to bear on a specific need of yours. Wondrous gifts unwrapped. Now, I'm all for wrapping some gifts too, but I just want to help us remember that the best gifts this Christmas, the best, probably are not and will not be sitting under the tree. TNC, the first way to know how to recognize the best gifts this season is this. You'll know that there's a person behind it who knows you and cares for you. Which leads to number two, the second way to recognize the best of gifts this Christmas. Number two, the best gifts cost nothing to get. Back to the scriptures, because one thing I love about the gift of the Magi, the wise men, is that the text makes the point of saying, after they gave the gold, frankincense, and myrrh, they left and returned home, but it doesn't say where they went, where they lived, and my guess is Mary and Joseph don't know either. Here's the gift, they say, nothing expected in return. Because some gifts come with expectations for a return. Now you give me mine. Now I expect you to give me thanks or your time or your attention next time I need. Here's your gift, a 20% coupon. Now you give me your 80%. Or think of a wrapped present from Santa Claus, which comes only if you've been good. As the song goes, he knows if you've been sleeping, he knows if you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. In other words, you be good and then you'll get a gift. You do something for me, I'll do something for you. But the best gifts cost nothing to get, and you don't have to earn them on the front end, and it does not obligate you on the back end. So here's a cool idea this Christmas. When you give a gift, don't only give this season to someone who has either loved you well in the past year, earned your thanks in the past year, or is a member of your family. I mean, definitely do that, but also give a gift or two or three to somebody just because. A gift that they haven't earned, that requires nothing in return. One way, one example, I think, is what we at TNC do through our donation of toys to North Fulton Community Charities. We give, and there is no expectation or possibility of return. No strings attached. Here's another way. Maybe there is somebody in your family or friendship orbit who doesn't deserve a gift from you this Christmas. They haven't earned it. Maybe figure out a way to give them a gift anyway, no strings attached. Now, this, of course, is going to require some continuing conversations and creativity, because you can think about this from the perspective of the giver. Are you a giver without strings attached? Or from the perspective of a receiver, what gifts might you receive this season that come with no strings attached? But the point here is that the best gifts cost nothing to get. Which leads to number three. Number three, the best gifts do cost something to give. It costs nothing to get, but it does cost something to give. Unlike, say, the entire re-gifting phenomenon. You know, if it ain't broke, give it to a friend. In which you rummage through the unimpressive presents you've received in the past and rewrap them as gifts to unsuspecting friends and coworkers, an idea that took off exponentially after a 1995 episode of Seinfeld, Season 6, Episode 12. I recommend that you watch that this week and laugh a lot. According to multiple websites today, the top three re-gifted items are soaps, bath salts, and moisturizers, category of like bathroom gifts, candles, and third, clothing, mostly sweaters and t-shirts. Re-gifting doesn't cost the giver very much at all, which is why white elephant gifts aren't really gifts. You know, every year people across the country sometimes do what they call the white elephant gift exchange, which is mostly about the humor of offloading something you don't want anymore. Can be great fun, but it's more about humor than the gift. But the best gifts cost something to give. Maybe it costs time to find it, effort to make it, money to buy it. But it does cost the giver something. I think again of the sacrifice of time and travel that the wise men gave Mary and Joseph. But also, TNC, we cannot ignore the financial cost of the gifts either. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh, among the costliest of items in that culture. And these magi were real people. Homes and jobs and bills and families. And not only do they leave their positions in the East to embark on a dangerous and difficult journey, but their primary purpose for going isn't to get, isn't to receive, it's to give. Where is the one who was born King of the Jews? They say, we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. Interestingly, of course, their worship isn't going to be raising hands and singing songs, but rather the giving of financial gifts. And in this way, we have sort of skewed worship in our day. We go to a Christmas worship service, and we probably mean more about reading the story and singing some songs. But here, the gift costs the wise men. And I want to just leave this one here for now, but just confront us with the financial generosity of Christmas and what that means. What does it do inside of you when you receive a gift that you are certain costs the giver nothing? Or what might it mean for you this Christmas to be the giver of the best of gifts? Which leads to a fourth and final way to identify a real gift when you see it. Number four. The best gifts are given freely after the cost is known. Two quick ideas here, freely and after the cost is known, because if it is not given freely, well, I'll never forget a few years ago now, one of my piano students, some of you know I teach piano lessons a couple evenings each week, one of my piano students brought in leftover Halloween candy to his lesson. And it was like a couple weeks after October 31. And my student didn't seem overly excited about it. And so I said, oh, you don't have to bring that in. You're super kind, but you can just keep it. And he said, I can't. My mom told me I had to give some of it away. And so he opened his treasure chest of candy and showed me his container and then asked me, please don't take the Reese's cups. Not freely given. And of course, imagine receiving any gift that the giver doesn't really want to give you. Just out of obligation, you receive it. And you'll begin to see that the best gifts are those given freely and given freely after the cost is known, after the giver already knows the cost. Because sometimes we'd rather not give if the cost feels too high. It's one reason why when someone says, hey, can you do me a favor? We say, it depends. Depends on what it is. Because if the cost is too high, I'm out. Oh, you want me to drive an hour out of my way for that? Oh, when I said I would go in on that gift, I was thinking like $5 in. But now that I know you're expecting everyone to go in $25. Oh, that's Saturday. On what time? Oh, let me check my plans. I might have something else going on. Oh, hey, Magi, do you know Jerusalem is 1,500 miles away? And do you know that just a token gift is plenty? No need for all of that gold and frankincense and myrrh that you're packing and planning on giving. But the nature of the greatest gifts is that they are not just costly, but they are given after the cost is known. So, it's 21 days until Christmas, and there will be lots of gifts to enjoy, some wrapped and some unwrapped. But let's remember that the best of gifts will, first, come with a person attached, and likely not be found under a tree. That the best of gifts will, second, cost nothing to get, but third, cost something to give, and fourth, will be given freely after the cost is known. Which brings us back to the scriptures and the 15 minutes of the original Christmas story, where we remember that the original Christmas story, it comes with a person attached, God with us. He didn't send a get-out-of-jail-free card in a box wrapped under a tree. The gift was and is a divine gift of love and friendship and wisdom and ultimate hope. And it cost us nothing to get. For God so loved the world that he gave. But it did cost the one in the manger something to give. Ultimately, a cross. And it was given freely, knowing the cost. As Paul points out in his letter to the church at Philippi in the New Testament, Philippians chapter 2, Jesus, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. In other words, he considered the situation and decided that equality with God wasn't something to be used for his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. And that's the divine gift we celebrate this Christmas. Let's pray. God, I pray now for every person listening. I pray that they would know the gift of your presence and care for them this season. I pray that they would know your generosity to them and love for them this season. And I pray that they would feel your love from this TNC community. And I pray that the love that they feel would energize and encourage and elevate them as they move through this season. God, help us all to recognize and to live from the best of gifts, and help us to be great gift givers. And now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.